House of Comments. My name's Emma Burnell and I'm a political journalist and freelance communications consultant and very excitingly new time playwright, which I love telling people now. I'm really, really pleased today to be joined by Councillor Matthew Brown, who is the leader of Preston Council and has been the leader for a few years, but has been the driving force behind what's been known as the Preston model for quite a few years longer than that. He's now written a book about how you too can paint your town red. Now, I believe that's the title of the book. Is that right, Matthew?
It certainly is, yes. It's been out for a couple of weeks. Obviously, it's doing pretty well, but it's really about spreading these ideas around to try and make sure we have fairer communities.
Absolutely. So just tell me, how did this all start? Where did the impetus come from? We'll go into sort of more detail on the model, but what happened in Preston to make you think, you know what, we should lead the world on this stuff?
What it was really is trying to respond to a worldwide financial crisis, which we're all grappling with about 10 years ago. And 10 years ago is when Labour got back in control of the council. And then linked to that austerity. So, you know, the way things were done before was there was a lot more money to spend on public services in the community. And then councils across the country are really struggling to make sure we look after our communities. And then in addition to that, the traditional development approach for local government, in the sense that you do rely quite heavily on bringing money in from outside, you know, inward investment, working with large developers, that collapsed. So in Preston 10 years ago, we faced both the collapse of the worldwide economy, but also the plans we had for regeneration and then austerity as well. So the Preston model of community wealth building, it came from those two quite unfortunate circumstances. So we thought we got to do something that really is very different, because we were pretty much left with no choice. And, you know, working class communities, councils in the Northwest and elsewhere, we were hit the hardest, really. So the budget of Preston Council were relatively small, but it was 30 odd million per year we're spending. It's now 20 odd million. So obviously we wanted to do something quite different.
Absolutely. So, we've been calling it the Preston model, but you also mentioned the phrase community wealth building there, which is obviously kind of what's at the heart of how it works. So do you want to just outline a little bit about what the approach is?
Yeah, it's very exciting, actually. It's trying to create a more resilient and democratic economy. So crucially, it's looking at ownership of the local economy and trying to have more local public control of the local economy. So it's trying to obviously create wealth within the community and redistribute the existing wealth, but also spread ownership around a lot more. So that's a concept. And a big part of it is doing things like saying, yes, pay a real living wage, in-source services. But it's trying to have this really big tent approach, realising that unlike conventional businesses, your university and hospital in your community, it's not going to get up and leave. So it's trying to utilise those anchor institutions to actually, you know, buy from local companies, encourage a living wage, look what they do with their assets and other things. So that's a big part of it. But it's also trying to promote, more socialist ownership models in any way locally, whether it's having a regional cooperative bank we're working on, or looking at worker ownership or insourcing, or building things at commercial developments that are going to be in the ownership of the municipality. So you put that all together and you can see how it's quite transformative. I mean, those are some of the ideas. There are others as well that are part of it. So that's it in a nutshell, really.
Brilliant. And I mean, it's very interesting because, as you say, it is transformative. But I feel like the way you went about it was also quite sort of Fabian in its gradualism and step-by-step approach, sort of breaking down these massive contracts into smaller parts that could be better bid for and dealt with by local businesses. Would you agree that that's sort of a strange kind of interesting dual approach?
Definitely. I mean, traditionally, I've obviously been from the left of the Labour Party. So my political hero was people like Tony Benn. But the real nirvana in this within the Labour Party is that the left of the Labour Party seems like it, as do those more in the centre, like the Co-op Party and others, really. So there seems to be a broad approach for these ideas. And if you talk about ideas of making sure public wealth goes to family-owned businesses, then even you get some Liberal Democrats and Conservatives that see the merit in it. You know, but my own position is that to bring this to scale and to actually try and tackle the inequalities we have, you've got to look at, you know, throwing everything at it and looking at the ownership aspect of it, because Conservative councils won't be very keen on having businesses owned by the people who work within them, worker-owned cooperatives. They won't be that keen on banking alternatives and looking at, you know, councils providing energy directly and other things. So it's, yeah, it is from the left, but it has an appeal beyond it. So that's the real positives about it, to be honest.
And how did you ensure that you got a really broad sense of buy-in from the community, not just the kind of the usual suspects or the people that you might immediately deal with, but really getting the whole of Preston kind of enthused and behind the schemes?
I mean, a big part of it was the council working with the big institutions. So we used, I mean, I did quite a bit, obviously, but it did help having an independent think tank stroke charity based in Manchester called the Centre for Local Economic Strategies. So they, in some ways, took a lot of the politics out of it. So they went around the heads of the big institutions, and they obviously worked with the council to redirect the spend locally. But now, on top of that as well, we've got you know, the community behind it very much, the BME community, trade unions, the voluntary sector, faith organisations. I mean, we're looking to establish food purchasing cooperatives now to reduce, you know, household bills. So that's the big tent approach in it, that it's the council, but also working with other institutions, but also the community itself, really. And, you know, even things like the worker ownership angle, we're getting interest now from our taxi drivers who want to organising a worker cooperative, to obviously they're seeing the likes of Uber coming into the community, and you know, so they're organising in a worker cooperative, and we're getting other interest as well from the creative sector too. So it's really, really positive.
Fantastic. And where have you had any pushback, and what has that been?
I think the pushback is that people are scared of new ideas. I mean, this is quite cutting edge creative stuff. And if you talk about local government, often people don't like new ideas within it. And also, in terms of the conventional approach to economic development, it's often very big business led, really. And obviously, it's challenging that mindset. And it's challenging the mindset that you've just got to, you know, make yourself as attractive as possible to large corporations, really, to come into the community. And if you look at the behavior of these corporations, often, you know, they don't recognize trade unions, they don't pay the real living wage. Environmentally, often they don't behave in a way that's very positive. So it's challenging that culture. But to me, it just seems like really common sense. I think what I'm doing is common sense, to be honest, but other people
Call
don't,
it
sadly.
radical common sense or extreme common sense, you call it in your book.
Yeah, extreme common sense. Yes, it was me that phrased that some time ago, and I forgot I said it, and then other people reminded me of it. Yeah, so it's extreme common sense, and it's good in terms, especially in terms of some of the statistics we did get until the pandemic came, which has put us back some time in terms of the highest employment rate we've had in history, really, at 83%. I mean, the figures go back about 15 or 20 years in terms of people who receive the real living wage of 9.50 an hour. There's other policies linked to it, like getting developers to provide at least 30%, having a target through planning policies, meaning that, you know, in terms of affordable housing completions in Lancashire, I think we're one of the best there. So you put that all together and it is making a big difference. But crucially, the city centre is being regenerated now through collective and public endeavours. So previously we waited for a large developer, we work with them very closely, expecting them to do it with us. Now we're doing it through collaboration. And crucially as well, a lot of local businesses and local people have been involved in that in a very participatory manner. So, you know, so things are really improving in Preston, which is good. But, you know, don't think things are perfect. We've got decades of deindustrialization, poverty that we've got to deal with. And obviously, I want to make sure we dent that as much as we can, really.
I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, there clearly is quite a lot of evidence that it was, as I say, really starting to work before the pandemic. But do you feel like you've also embedded a certain amount of resilience that'll help you build back maybe better and easier than some other people will be able, some other areas might be able to?
Without a doubt. I mean, the hospital has joined the project a couple of years back. So really interestingly, the hospital chose to buy masks during the pandemic. I think 30% of NHS staff in Preston and surrounding areas were mass procured by a Preston-based company. That created 90 jobs. So if that wasn't happening, obviously we'd be in a loss, a much worse state. But really importantly, we've been in restrictions longer and deeper than most. So we've been in some kind of restrictions since early August. So, you know, God knows what would it be like if we hadn't done this at the scale we have done. You know, but it's got to be a big effort to get us back to where we were before the pandemic because it was really bearing fruit. And obviously, we've gone back a year or two now. So, you know, so we've got to accelerate it going forward if we can. Who knows whether we're going to come out of this on the 21st of June? But if we do, then obviously, it's going to be a big collective effort to regenerate the city.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think that, I mean, you're obviously the leader of the local council, so you have to say yes to this, but is there something particularly special about Preston that's made it work there? And if so, how transferable is the approach, if not the whole model?
Yeah, I mean, what is really good about it is in Preston is that you've got some really forward-thinking people. There's still quite a community spirit, quite a bit of radicalism in the trade unions in Preston that's still there, to be honest. But crucially, we've got lots of anchor institutions. So there's big institutions that aren't going to get up and leave. Now, we're lucky because other parts of Lancashire they don't have that. So we've been able to work with them collaboratively to redirect a lot of this wealth into the local community, really, through where they purchase collectively. Now, obviously, that isn't transferable to lots of places, but what you are seeing is different areas doing community wealth building in different ways. So if you go to Islington, they've, I think, insourced hundreds of millions back into the local council, meaning which has meant that I think 1,400 people have got an increase to the London Living Wage. If you go to Merseyside, you've got Steve Rotherham who's talking about community wealth building in land and assets. So all the land that they have in Merseyside, let's build community land trusts, let's look at social businesses there. And then, you know, other areas are doing it very differently as well. Mark Drakeford in Wales has a concept known as a foundational economy, which is quite similar in the sense that you get the public sector to support Welsh-based businesses, you know, small businesses, medium-sized businesses, so they can become a bedrock of the Welsh economy. So it's happening in many places. Sadiq Khan has mentioned as well that he wants his big institutions in London with a collective spend of £73 billion to, you know, lead the recovery by looking where they recruit and how they purchase. Now you then link that to some American cities are getting quite radical, like New York or Chicago, where they're talking about worker ownership. They're talking about establishing a public bank because Wall Street has, they feel, actually led to inequality and poverty in the communities. And then Deputy Mayor of New York City, Phil Thompson, he's talking quite interestingly about how we can, you know, put individual personal data into some kind of collective or cooperative. Because you know the tech corporations might do so well because they get hold of our individual data and then put it into a legal format. So he's saying let's disrupt that and form a collective really or a commons. So you know what's really exciting me and has been doing for some time is these trends are there and they're responding to basically the failures of capitalism, the fact that you know we've had this free market economic system that's you know got more feral over the last few decades and 10 years ago, these conversations weren't taking place in cities and regions, and now they are. So something's happening here. So we're at the infancy potentially of a new economic model.
Absolutely. Now, I know that you do address this in your book, but how do you counter the argument that the model itself is quite parochial? It's very much about sort of keeping things small, which might have a tendency to have a more insular outlook rather than a kind of, broader, national or international outlook.
I mean, that is something that is quite lazy thinking, to be honest, because people just think it's about buying local. It's not. Procurement's a big part of it, but it's only one part of it. And you know, obviously, we want more wealth to stay within our local economy, within Preston and the local community. But crucially, it's trying to look at a more diverse set of people that you buy from. So instead of just buying from the usual suspects, the large outsourcing firms, which do win a lot of these contracts, even when, you know, even in the when they're buying in goods as well and construction and other things. Why not support local businesses and cooperatives and other forms of enterprise that are more democratic? So it's been quite misunderstood, this idea it's just about protectionism and that it's some kind of Donald Trump type set of policies. It's a complete opposite, to be honest. So it's quite lazy thinking, really. But I think people want to put it down, don't they? Because it's a threat, isn't it? That if this is brought to scale and lots of cities do it, and the community gets behind it, and people really understand how economies basically work in the interests of the wealthy often, it's a threat to those interests. So I think that is why it's being talked down in such a way. But it's a hard slog, obviously. It takes time to bring it to where we need it to be, but I think we've got a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean it's fascinating. As some of our listeners will know, I used to work for a local government think tank, and one of the things, because I'm a total dork, I got really obsessive about actually was procurement, because it always felt like a David and Goliath scenario when you had councils that were being cut to the bone. They didn't have the same kind of inside expertise that your big four would have, for example. So just the legal ability to do that kind of big contract stuff was so difficult, because you just never had the ability to negotiate those and have the same kind of muscle in procurement. So I think it's a really interesting, by breaking it down, I guess what you're doing is setting everyone up as a David and bypassing the Goliaths. Would that be a reasonable description, if slightly flowery?
Yeah, I mean, it's there were many players in the procurement side of it, really. But I mean, it was a county council when it was Labour that did that with feeding school kids. And interesting, the contract was worth 2 million quid, and they broke it down into about nine different lots, laying off cheese, meat, fish, milk, whatever. And quite interestingly, the big suppliers that often supply skills across the country, they weren't interested in contracts that size. So it all went to companies linked to local farmers. It's probably similar with construction, really. Construction projects are very, very large, into tens of millions, often hundreds of millions. If you can break them down into pieces potentially, that will mean that often the larger corporations are interested because there isn't that much profit in it. And then you get your local builders involved in building things in the community. So it is, I never thought procurement could be that exciting, really. I thought it was one of the most boring things you can ever come across. But then when you actually see what the council's spending, X tens of millions each year, as is the police, as is the university, and the hospital spending hundreds of millions. This is huge amounts of wealth which can really lift communities up and tackle deprivation if it's done
Absolutely.
well. And then interestingly, even the procurement officers, which got really excited about it, which they're not the kind of people you expect to get that easily excited about these kind of things, but they did. And they were saying, well, we're spending 18%, we'd love to get that to 50%. And they got really enthused by it. So he had that coalition of practitioners really impressed her that we're looking to all do this together, and it was very interesting doing it. And this started about 5 or 6 years ago, when there wasn't the publicity we're getting now. So it was really fascinating, but seeing how it was working at the time and how people were really changing the culture about how these institutions view themselves. So yes, a university does educate people, and yes, a ho hospital does heal the sick, but they were starting to think themselves as kind of economic actors as well. And when you think about it, the chain stores that you see on the high street, they're much smaller in terms of what they spend and who they employ than these big institutions. They're actually more important economic actors. So the whole idea behind community wealth building was, let's be resilient and democratic and try to, obviously, we don't turn away inward investment. We still want to attract inward investment. We're not closed investor by any stretch of the imagination. But we wanted to say that if we want to remain resilient, we need to have some democracy here, where the community is more in control through its institutions of what happens economically in case there is an economic shock or a pandemic. You know what I mean? I mean, interestingly, there is evidence that when you run down your local business base that much, small businesses, family-owned businesses, if there's an economic crisis, do you know what I mean? It's those that suffer the most, really, because you've got very little local enterprise to actually, keep jobs in the community and other things.
And tell me how it works for the next generation. So you've changed it around, you get these workers' cooperatives, worker-owned businesses. How does that then get passed along?
Well, what we're doing with that is we're incubating 10 at the moment. So we've got one that was actually, well, it's a social enterprise, actually. So Kay Johnson with Alana, she became a worker cooperative. So she did lots of work and she joined the movement there. We've got Northwest Black Cabs, which is our taxi drivers. We've got Preston Digital Foundation, possibly one of many digital cooperatives. And we've got a cooperative education centre with the support of the trade unions that's now incubated as well just this month. So the idea is we have a network of these businesses. So we're also looking at cleaning, potentially social care, construction, former prisoners, translators. I think there's a ceramics charity, which is really popular, wants to become a worker cooperative. And then if you link that with the bank, that will be a cooperative as well. Mm. And the stuff we're doing in the public sector around the cinema that we're going to build and, you know, getting support from the institutions to support that kind of alternative economy. It's really powerful. And that's where I want to be. And it's really, it's a question about democracy because people think democracy is just voting for your MP every 5 years or your council every year or every 4 years. But, you know, I mean... The idea behind economic democracy is that there's democracy in the workplace because ultimately the people creating wealth in companies is the people who work there. You know, if you've got a large company that employs 5,000 people, if those 5,000 people don't turn up, then the, you know, the owners of the business and the shareholders and the investors won't make the wealth that they do. It's really on the backs of the workers. So it's trying to acknowledge that we want to put, you know, workers more in control of some of the businesses in Preston and then try and create a movement that way. And it's not as scary as you think. It's not as radical as you think. You go to Waitrose, a bit of a middle-class example, I know, but or John Lewis, and it's actually employee-owned. So they do share the profits. And there is an element of democracy in there. They have a say over who is on the board. So it's not as revolutionary as you think. It's really common sense. It's just we're conditioned to think things have to be a certain way. And they don't, in my opinion. So what I'm trying to do in Preston, and it's the hardest thing in the world because it's very difficult to bring this to the scale that we need. But we are, I think, getting there and reaching a tipping point, especially with the university supporting it with their business school. We've got the largest cooperative in the world, Mondragon Cooperative Corporation, based in Spain. They're helping us do what we need to do. The unions are getting behind it too, you know, and obviously the council is as well and the community too, to a degree. So, you know, it's really good. And yeah, you know, I want to bring this to scale in the next few years and before whatever happens to me as a politician, because it's not a particularly stable business a lot of the time.
No, absolutely. So there's a couple of things I want to ask you before we wrap up. You say that the trade unions have got behind it, which is great. Do you see there being any tensions between there being this kind of worker ownership and a traditional trade union sort of model of negotiating with owners and management? And what are the conversations around that been like?
I mean, that is an excellent question, Emma. There has been a little bit of tension, not an awful lot, but it doesn't have to displace what unions do anyway, which is fantastic, representing the members, obviously, you know, representing their interests, the services they provide anyway, taking industrial action if needed. This is doing something new. And the way that the American trade unions are doing it, and it's a very different dynamic in America because much smaller state, much lower union density. But what they are looking at doing, some of them, is to actively acquire small companies and potentially larger ones as employee-owned trusts with union support. So they become unionized cooperatives. Mm. Now, I'm trying to bring that conversation to the UK. And even in Preston, we're looking at, I think the education centre will be a union cooperative. And I think potentially the taxis might be as well, because the RMT have got behind it. So that doesn't displace what they do anyway. It adds to it. So I think there's a potential to actually increase density in trade unions and actually get the trade unions to play a much more direct role in the commercial economy, really. I mean, another example was, I mean, Thomas Cook and Patisserie Valerie had lots of Unite members there. They got into trouble on the high street just because of the behaviour of the people who bought them. And they'd be ideal for employee ownership if the unions would work with the cooperative sector to support that. But this just needs a bit of creativity, and it's not a threat to what they're doing anyway, because I was in my previous life, working in the civil service, I spent 15 years as a union officer representing people at tribunals and other things. So I'm very strongly behind what they do. But I just think, in terms of what we've been up against in the movement with decades of neoliberal economics and privatization and outsourcing and other things, you've just got to be a bit creative and look at new ideas. And that's what it's about.
Absolutely, absolutely. So my last question is a very me question, I'm afraid. I spend a lot of time, because I'm a comms person essentially. I'm a writer, and my job has always been, I always describe my job working for various think tanks and pressure groups as translating wonk to human. And I really, really like your framing of extreme common sense. I think it's a really useful way of talking about. I think sometimes the left are too busy trying to tell themselves that they're radical without realizing that that actually scares people. Whereas actually, you can, it's just common sense is what the Tories do when they're being radical. So I love the idea that you've basically pinched that idea off them. And so how, I mean, what made you sort of start to frame it in that way? Was it just what occurred to you, or do you find that people are more receptive if you're both basically kind of putting it like that?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The left and often the left often like to talk amongst themselves, don't they? And they tend to get involved in a very think tank culture. So I was trying to, an academic culture as
Guilty
well.
as
So
charged.
yeah, we all do it, but I was trying to rebel against that to a degree and just try to appeal to people, and especially around the debate about Brexit. I voted to remain. It was quite a marginal decision because my view was that the European Union did improve communities, but not at the level that it resonated with working people that strongly, that they felt a resonance with it. So I did understand why some of them wanted to kick the establishment. So it was trying to appeal to people who might have voted for Brexit, for example, with common sense language, really, because I feel that the right has stolen all these phrases like, take back control. That's really a left wing thing, isn't it? That you take control of, local economies, local communities, and run it in the interests of working people. So, yeah, it was trying to rebel against that culture on the left, but also try to rebel against the quite shameless pinching of Labour slogans by the right, to be honest, which they're doing all the time. I mean, the Tories are trying to take, ideas from the left, say they're implementing them, but implementing very little of them, really. So it's a bit about that. It was a bit like that, to be honest. So that was the idea behind it, and it is very common sense. But I think what we've had for the last 40 years, especially in the 80s, and from 2010 onwards, obviously with the coalition and the Conservatives, it's totally uncommon sense what they've done to this country. It makes no sense whatsoever, no rational sense. Like having the contact tracing service run by unaccountable corporations who have no previous experience of running public health. It doesn't make any sense at all, but they're very good at portraying these things as being common sense. So they're portraying things that are bad as good, really. So it's trying to, bring the language into a more, common sense set of ideas so it appeals to people, really, because we've got to appeal to people who feel that politics is not working for them, and that's a lot of people. If you look at
It's
voter
the vast
apathy.
majority of people, isn't it? Absolutely. And I mean, I you're singing from my hymn sheet now. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed reading your book and thinking about this model. I'm actually currently doing some work with my own local authority, quite a different sort of project, but I'm very interested to see what we can do, what I can nick off you, basically. I used to always have this conversation when I was working for the local government think tank. I would talk to people, and they would say something like, "Oh, we really, really want to be innovative." And I go, "Oh, great, great, let's go and be really imaginative." And go, "What's best practice?" Doesn't work like that. So yeah, I'm really excited to just keep track of you, basically, see how it keeps going. So do keep in touch.
Yeah, thanks.
We'll have you on for the sequel.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to do so. Thanks for inviting me, because obviously a big part of this is spreading ideas elsewhere. Obviously, get the ideas out there in Preston a lot more, but crucially, these ideas can apply in many places, really. So thanks for having me.
No, absolutely. And thank you so much for your time, and especially after a long day of hard council work. And I know that at the moment in particular, local government have absolutely pushed to their limit. So I really appreciate it. If it helps, I'm terribly fond of Preston, actually. My uncle used to live in a small village not far from Preston, so I always used to go through Preston to get to him.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely place. Come and visit at some point.
Absolutely, I'd love to. You can show me around all these amazing schemes.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant. Lovely. Well, thank you ever so much. It just remains for me to say thank you to Kevin McLeod at Competech.com for our theme tune. And this has been a Political Human production.